Hello and welcome to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds. My name is John Coe. I am in Flagstaff, and I will be your volunteer reader for today, reading articles that were published in the Arizona Capital Times on or about February 6, 2025. Headline: Nearly $40 million theft triggers bills to help state auditor. Written by Jacob Thorington and published in the Arizona Capital Times on February 6, 2025. Arizona lawmakers want to empower state auditors to have better access to financial documents from government agencies that are under audit after a former county treasurer stole nearly $40 million from Santa Cruz County. The House Government Committee passed a trio of bills on February 5th that would give auditors more direct oversight over county treasurer's offices. Former Santa Cruz County Treasurer Elizabeth Gutfahr pleaded guilty in November to embezzling $38.7 million over 10 years. She also pleaded guilty to charges of money laundering and tax evasion for failing to pay income taxes of more than $13 million. Quote, one of the worst scandals in Arizona history, said the sponsor of the three bills, Representative Matt Gress, a Republican from Phoenix. Quote, this treasurer fabricated financial records and put the bank's letterhead and fictitious contact information on these documents. One of the reasons why Gutfahr was able to embezzle funds for so long was because the Auditor General's office must rely on county treasurers and other government officials to hand over financial documents and bank statements. Quote, auditors would have had an additional tool to help detect her actions if they were able to obtain detailed county treasurer's office financial information directly from financial institutions. Auditor General Lindsay Perry wrote in an August 2024 report after Gutfahr's embezzlement was uncovered. The primary bill in the three Gress measures aims to solve the issue Perry described. HB 2368 would give auditors the ability to access financial documents of state agencies and political subdivisions directly from their banks. County treasurers are supportive of the measure. Three county treasurers testified at the House Government Committee on February 5th and welcomed more transparency of their offices. Quote, the treasurers are appalled at what happened here, said Maricopa County Treasurer John Allen, a former state representative. Quote, we feel ashamed that somebody did something so horrendous to taxpayers, and we don't ever want it again. Allen said Maricopa County's banker, Chase Bank, has informed him that it has issues with handing over financial documents to the Auditor General's office. The bill would exempt financial institutions from any liability to state entities or political subdivisions for providing information as requested by state auditors. The two other measures Gress introduced, HB 2369 and HB 2433, would instruct state auditors to conduct more thorough procedural reviews of county treasurer offices and require treasurers and county boards of supervisors to undergo at least 10 hours of education related to treasurer's duties and powers every year. Quote, this is where all the money is. You want to go where the money is, Gress said. Gutfahr is awaiting sentencing, but Santa Cruz County is seeking $40 million in damages from the Auditor General's office to recover the funds that were embezzled. The county filed a lawsuit against the Auditor General's office and the state in November, alleging negligence from auditors for failing to catch Gutfahr's actions for more than a decade. The county's complaint states that Gutfahr was able to strategically steal funds because the Auditor General only reviewed bank statements from June, so Gutfahr never stole funds in June or July. Quote, in stealing these funds from the county, Gutfahr routinely exploited the Auditor General's lax auditing standards, the county's complaint states. In fact, Gutfahr was only able to pursue her scheme because of the Auditor General's failure to abide by reasonable standards. Gutfahr also provided the Auditor General's office with at least five fabricated investment statements, and county officials say she was emboldened by the Auditor General's alleged negligence. The first year she stole was in 2014, when she took $386,000. In 2023, she stole more than $11 million. Quote, there was a sophisticated scheme occurring in Santa Cruz County by the treasurer to conceal illegal activity, Gress said. The Auditor General's office filed a motion to dismiss the case in January. Attorneys for the Auditor General's office argued that Santa Cruz County hasn't shown evidence that auditors issued specific false representations of fact needed to prove negligent misrepresentation claims. They wrote in their motion that the Auditor General's office cannot be held liable for inaccurate financial statements because the county itself provided its office with the statements, something that would not have happened had Gress's measure been the law. Quote, the funds Gutfahr took came from county accounts, which the county controlled, and over which the county has broad legal custodial responsibilities under both Arizona statute as well as government accounting standards and principles, the defendant attorneys wrote in the motion to dismiss. Quote, if the representations the county allegedly relied upon are found in the financial statements themselves, then the county cannot prove it relied, let alone justifiably relied, on information provided to the Auditor General. Santa Cruz County has requested a trial by jury in its civil complaint. A motion for discovery was granted on February 5th in Maricopa County Superior Court. Headline: Democrats' groundwater proposal still awaits committee hearing. Written by Jamar Younger and published in the Arizona Capital Times on February 6, 2025. Several lawmakers and stakeholders are willing to work with governor's office and Democrats who introduced new legislation to counter groundwater shortages in rural areas. But the twin bills in the House and Senate need to receive a committee hearing first. Senator Priya Sundarajan, a Democrat from Tucson, and Representative Chris Mathis, a Democrat from Tucson, joined Governor Katie Hobbs and a bipartisan group, which included rural mayors and county supervisors, on January 30th to introduce the Rural Groundwater Management Act of 2025. The legislation was created to give more local control to rural areas contending with groundwater shortages. The proposed law was introduced as mirror bills in each chamber, Senate Bill 1425 and House Bill 2714. The bills would establish Rural Groundwater Management Areas, RGMAs, in the Gila Bend Basin, Hualapai Valley Basin, Ranagrass Plain Basin, and San Simeon Subbasin, and establish certain requirements and restrictions for groundwater pumping in those areas. The Wilcox Active Management Area, which was enacted to preserve the existing supply of groundwater in the Wilcox Basin, would also be converted to a Rural Groundwater Management Area. The legislation would also create a local rural groundwater management area council for each area with members appointed by the governor, Senate president, House speaker, and the minority leaders in each chamber. Officials at the press conference touted the bills as the first step in preventing the depletion of groundwater in rural areas while preserving local control. Quote, these are the starting points for rural groundwater negotiations moving into this session, Sundarajan said. This comprehensive plan was born out of the consensus of the diverse business and municipal interests represented on the Governor's Water Policy Council, followed by months of stakeholder meetings, constituent engagement, and honest conversations with the agricultural community. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, along with leaders of various advocacy groups, have expressed a common desire to address the groundwater shortages. Some want to emphasize local control and limit what they perceive as government overreach, while others want to see more restrictions in order to protect depleted areas. Quote, Republicans will lead this issue as we did last year and remain committed to working with anyone that shares the goal of protecting rural aquifers and economies, said Senator T.J. Schaap, a Republican from Coolidge, chairman of the Senate Natural Resources Committee, in a prepared statement. Quote, we will, however, continue to push back on any and all efforts to sacrifice true rural control for executive overreach consolidated in Phoenix. Schaap said, in a text message, he hasn't committed to hearing the Senate version of the measure, but the committee is still sorting through the list of bills that need to be heard. It, quote, doesn't mean it doesn't go forward, but we're just making it through the list at this point, he said. Representative Gail Griffin, a Republican from Hereford, who chairs the House Natural Resources, Energy and Water Committee, said she is still reviewing the bill and planned to provide further comment on it once the review was completed. The leaders of groups such as the Arizona Farm Bureau, Sierra Club's Grand Canyon chapter, are both optimistic about the proposed legislation, while having different concerns regarding potential restrictions. Quote, "When we talk about cuts, it talks about reducing how much food and fiber we produce, and that can be challenging," said Arizona Farm Bureau President John Bullets. "So we're trying to work through what the written policy looks like from the governor's office." Bullets is hopeful both parties can work together to address groundwater issues without hindering farmers and agricultural production. Quote, "We're hopeful that we can get a solution across the finish line that can be signed into law, but if that doesn't happen, there are also opportunities to work on improving current public policy if that's all we can get done. But I do think both Republicans and Democrats are interested in finding solutions that work for Arizonans," he said. Sandy Baer, director of the Sierra Club's Grand Canyon chapter, was also encouraged by the legislation, but wants to see it strengthened to further protect against groundwater pumping. Quote, "We would like it to include more mandatory requirements, but the fact that it does include some initial rural groundwater management areas is important," Baer said. She hopes the bills receive hearings so lawmakers and other stakeholders can discuss further improvements to protect groundwater and meet the needs of residents in rural areas. Quote, "This legislature, by and large, has ignored residents, and they now have an opportunity to do something with this bill," she said. "From our perspective, we would love to see them make it stronger, but at a minimum, this is a good start." You're listening to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been providing information access since 1979, and you can always listen to our live stream at sunsounds.org. Headline: Rental Assistance Proposed for People Facing Short-Term Hardships. Written by Kira Riley and published in the Arizona Capital Times on February 6th, 2025. Tenants facing eviction or coming up short before the first of the month could see rental assistance from the state under legislation that is underway in both chambers. Senator Annalise Ortiz introduced a bill to create a statewide rental assistance program in the Senate, and Representative Alma Hernandez is following suit in the House. Though the two proposals sponsored by Democrats split on the cut of funding, both aim to prevent evictions and eventual homelessness by providing up to 3 months in monetary assistance. Quote, "It is a short-term relief for families," Hernandez said. "Perhaps they got sick and they're not able to work for a few weeks, or God forbid something happens and someone in their family passes away, and that's who they depend on in the household. Things happen all the time. We can never plan ahead for emergencies. It is a way for us to be able to alleviate some of that pressure on families, ensuring that we're able to help keep them in their home until they get back on their feet." The bills come as a coalition of the lawmakers from both sides of the aisle make housing and homelessness a priority this session. Quote, "We can't just support rental assistance in the same way we can't just support supply solutions," Ortiz said. "We have to look at it as a holistic problem. I think there really is the appetite this year to stop talking about the problem and finally take action." But given the current circumstances in both chambers, Hernandez said, shoring up Republican support, finding common ground, and landing on a bipartisan agreement remains a priority. Ortiz first introduced Senate Bill 1554. The legislation directs 10% of the state's portion of the proceeds received from prime contracting sales tax to a minted Arizona Rental Assistance Fund, with half the money allocated to rental assistance and the other half to emergency housing needs and grants. Ortiz noted in fiscal year 2024, prime contracting sales tax brought in $1.1 billion, with a speculative 10% cut raking in about $100 million. Hernandez's bill takes a similar cut and tempers the draw from prime contracting sales tax to 5%, as she said, doing so could provide more feasible in the Republican-controlled legislature. Under both bills, applications would be open to anyone behind or anticipating falling behind on their rent. Applicants would be eligible for up to 3 months of rental assistance within a 12-month cycle. If approved, funds would go directly to the landlord and would bar eviction on the basis of non-payment of rent the same month assistance is received. Tenants would also be required to demonstrate the ability to pay rent in the future. Both proposals tasked the Department of Economic Security with administering the program and developing an application for tenants and landlords. This proposal would not be DES's first swing at such a program. In 2021, with federal funds, the department oversaw the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. The program was brought on by the Federal Consolidated Appropriations Act in 2021, which provided up to $3,500 per month in rental and utility assistance. People whose income was less than or equal to 80% of the area median income, who had experienced financial hardship as a result of the COVID pandemic, and who had received an eviction notice, utility shutoff notice, past due notice, or could provide any evidence of unsafe or unhealthy living conditions or housing instability, were eligible for the funds. DES also administered the Arizona Rental Assistance Program, which stemmed from funds from the Arizona Rescue Plan Act. The program provided a lump sum payment up to three times a household's monthly rent with a cap of $10,500. To be eligible, a household had to have a child under the age of 18 or a senior aged 60 or older, to have an income below 80% of the area median income, and to have received an eviction notice or past due rental notice or past due utility bill. Applicants also had to show full-time employment or qualify for unemployment, workers' compensation, or disability benefits, or show a full-time job starting in the coming months. In total, DES approved 26,228 applications and dispersed $273.7 million in the Emergency Rental Assistance Program and approved 5,742 applications and dispersed $25.95 million in assistance in the Arizona Rental Assistance Program, which ceased accepting applications at the end of August. Quote, money that had poured into the state from COVID and ARPA, Arizona Rescue Plan Act, is very quickly drying up, so there are fewer and fewer options for people to get help to pay their rent when they are in an emergency situation now, Ortiz said. Quote, DES was instrumental in getting COVID relief rental assistance money out the door, so they have the infrastructure and they have the processes necessary to make sure that it is distributed effectively, Ortiz said. DES did not immediately respond to a request for comment on whether or not it planned to support these bills. Both Hernandez and Ortiz said they would continue to work on garnering bipartisan support. Quote, it doesn't matter if you are a Republican or a Democrat, if you can't pay your rent and you need help, there should be options available to you, Ortiz said. I'm hoping my Republican colleagues will agree with that sentiment. Headline: GOP bill advances banning AG from charging county supervisors. Written by Howard Fisher for the Arizona Capital Times and published on February 6, 2025. Republican lawmakers are moving to hobble the ability of the Attorney General to force county supervisors to do what the courts have said is their job, certify election results. Legislation awaiting a full House vote would legally bar Chris Mays, and whoever succeeds her, to bring criminal or civil charges against any county supervisors who refuse to vote for the formal canvass based on a, quote, good faith belief that there are issues that, quote, materially affect the integrity or accuracy of election results. But HB 440 is actually broader. It would allow supervisors to avoid any legal liability for balking at certification if they have any, quote, documentation or other evidence that suggests, quote, potential irregularities or errors in the election process. More to the point, within that definition are not just official reports, but also sworn affidavits and, quote, expert testimony. It does not say, however, from whom those affidavits must come, and that leaves the door open to anyone who claims that they have seen something amiss, providing a legal basis for supervisors to be able to balk. The approved measure this week by the House Committee on Federalism, Military Affairs, and Elections on a party line vote came despite opposition from Mays. Quote, HB 2440 lets county supervisors stall election results and play games with certification under the vague excuse of a good faith belief, said Mays press aide Richie Taylor. Quote, if Republicans in the legislature cared about real election integrity and reform, they would not have advanced a bill that weakens accountability and invites chaos. But Representative Rachel Cashel, who crafted the measure, said what the Attorney General's office did to two Cochise County supervisors after the 2022 election proves the need for these protections. Quote, they had some voters who brought them some affidavits and some concerns about some of the election results, said the Tucson Republican, and what happened after that was a little bit shocking. Tom Crosby and Peggy Judd refused to complete the canvass amid what they said were questions about whether the machines that had been used to tabulate the ballots were properly certified. That refusal came despite repeated assurances from Corey Lorick, who was the state elections director, that the machines had met all the legal standards. Judd finally complied, but only after being ordered to do so by Pima County Superior Court Judge Casey McGinley. He ruled that state law is clear that supervisors were required to certify the vote. Crosby did not show up at the canvass, leaving it to Judd and Ann English, the lone Democrat on the board, to complete the process of certification. All that led to Crosby and Judge being indicted on charges that they conspired to delay the canvass. Both were also charged with illegal interference with an election officer. That was based on the delay in preventing Katie Hobbs, who was then Secretary of State, from completing the statewide canvass. Judd eventually pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor charge of failing to perform her duties as an elected official. She was placed on unsupervised probation for 90 days and fined $500. Crosby continues to fight the charges. Cashel said the supervisors had constituents coming to them with concerns, and she described what the Attorney General's office was doing as, quote, threatening them with jail time for doing their jobs. She also cited an incident involving Mojave County supervisors who were weighing whether to tally votes in the 2022 election by hand to answer questions about the accuracy of the tallying equipment. In that case, Mays sent a letter to the board warning them that going down that path could, quote, result in various felonies and misdemeanor penalties. Quote, so this is just to protect those supervisors, Cashel said of her legislation, allowing them to exercise their First Amendment rights when deciding whether or not to perform the formal canvass. Quote, they have the right to question that and not just feel forced to certify an election, she said. Cashel's proposal drew support from Isaac Glover, who describes himself on his X profile as MAGA and as a supporter of Republican causes. He had previously announced on the platform that he was working with Cashel to, quote, end the unjust prosecution of local officials. Quote, this is a threat to democracy, he told the committee members in testifying for the measure. He claimed that at least one judge reviewing Carrie Lake's challenge of her 2022 loss in the gubernatorial race to Hobbs said, quote, there were a bunch of issues with the election, but refused to overturn the results. There was no such finding. In fact, every court that handed down rulings in that case concluded that whatever evidence Lake introduced was insufficient to set aside the results. The courts, however, did refuse to let her reopen her case with what she said was late-discovered evidence. Glover, however, pursued his claim. Quote, is it not a threat to democracy to certify an election when you know, you admit that there are problems with this? He asked lawmakers. That doesn't make any sense. Representative Alexander Kolodin, a Republican from Scottsdale, said it makes sense to limit the power of the Attorney General to haul supervisors into court for these kinds of situations. He said voters in each county select their supervisors, and those board members, said Colodin, include supervision over elections and, quote, to make decisions over whether those results are fair and accurate, and then to certify them. Headline: Federal judge blocks Trump's birthright citizenship order. Written by Howard Fisher and published in the Arizona Capital Times on February 6, 2025. Calling birthright citizenship, quote, an unequivocal constitutional right, a federal judge on February 6th blocked the Trump administration from implementing its plan to deny citizenship to children born to people who are not here legally. Quote, the citizenship clause is clear. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside, wrote Judge John Conower. And he rejected claims by lawyers for the Department of Justice that clause, part of the 14th Amendment, passed after the Civil War, really was designed only to protect freed slaves and other black Americans. Quote, it is one of the precious principles that makes the United States the great nation that it is, the judge wrote, of citizenship by birth. The president cannot change, limit, or qualify this constitutional right via an executive order. Strictly speaking, Conower's order is not the last word, but simply a preliminary injunction that still gives Trump and his administration a chance to try to convince the judge at a full-blown trial that he's wrong. But the judge pointed out that one of the requirements he is required to consider in issuing such an injunction is whether the challengers, in this case, Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays, and counterparts from several other states, are ultimately likely to prevail. In this case, Conower said, they have to make that case. The judge said the challengers also met another test for obtaining an injunction. He said that allowing the administration to deny citizenship to certain children born in this country would result in irreparable harm to the states in having to provide essential medical care and social services for those whom the Trump order would declare ineligible for federal benefits. And to drive home the point, Conower said, even though other states, including Arizona, filed this case to block the Trump directive, he was barring the administration from implementing its plan anywhere in the United States. He said to do so otherwise would create a situation where babies born in some states, not protected by the court order, could travel to those other states where there was an injunction. Quote, this is simply perverse and bizarre, Conower wrote. You've been listening to the Arizona Capital Times, a production of Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. Once again, my name is John Coe. Thank you for listening.